You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
One of the most famous sports photographs ever taken shows Bobby Orr, who ranks among the greatest hockey players of all time, flying horizontally through the air, 3 feet off the ice, while scoring the overtime goal that clinched the Stanley Cup for the Boston Bruins in 1970. During his 10 years with the Bruins, Bobby Orr led his team to victory during 2 Stanley Cup championships, won a record 8 consecutive Norris trophies as the NHL's best defenseman, and 3 consecutive Hart trophies as the league's most valuable player. He also won the league's scoring title twice and, after a knee injury, ended his career. But he became, at the age of 31, the youngest player ever inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. That photo of him flying through the air towards the goal graces the cover of his memoir, simply called Orr. It's published by Putnam, and I'm thrilled that it has brought Bobby Orr to our show today. Hello.
Leonard, nice being with you.
Although you won almost too many honors and awards to name, am I correct to assume, based on what you've written here, that you'd rather be remembered as a good person than a great hockey player? Are you serious?
Well, stats are stats. You can go many places and read about stats. I've been approached many times about doing a book. I didn't want to do a book on stats, game to game, things I did. I wanted to try to write a book that whoever might read it, take something from it. So I, you know, go back to my childhood, talking about the people that helped me along the way. There's a little bit in there on parents that think they might have that next Sidney Crosby, that next great player. So there's a lot in the book, and hopefully whoever might read it will take something from it.
Are you concerned that many young players coming up today are focused mainly on themselves and on winning rather than on helping people who need a hand?
I think. Well, first of all, I think whether it's you, Leonard, you probably do a lot of good things, charity work, and so on, because people recognize you.
Well, I'm close to a saint, Bobby.
Yeah. If there's a way we can help because of what we did, put a smile on someone's face or raise funds for a cause, I think that's a responsibility we have. Years ago, there was an athlete that did a commercial that says, you know, I'm not a role model. Well, I just don't agree with that. I think once you turn pro or have a position like yours or like mine, we do have a responsibility, and we are role models, and what we do and what we say are important. And because of our positions, there's a lot we can do. When you get into a position like we are in, you join that club. You know, and the parents are buying your sneakers, they're buying your skates. Did it? Hey, you become a member of that role model club.
It's just a way of giving back.
Absolutely.
You give your parents, as you kind of suggested earlier, also your siblings credit and thanks for their support for your hockey career. Didn't your mother and father each work at least 2 jobs while you were
young? Yes, they did. We didn't have much growing up. Our house wasn't a whole lot, but we had a lot of love in it. You know, we didn't sit down every day with my parents and talk about values and rules and so on, but there was an understanding, and I think the best thing my parents taught us was hard work. If you work hard, much can happen, and both my parents worked 2 jobs, and sometimes 3. We had 5 children in the family. We didn't have a whole lot, but we were taught to be respectful. Things like if you sat at a table with a hat, you're going to get a swat in the head. And I think that was very important. But as I say, didn't have much, but there were good values taught in our home.
Hockey is a fairly expensive sport today. It requires equipment, coaching, lots of travel. Was it less expensive, relatively speaking, when you were young and living in Parry Sound, Ontario?
I never had a new pair of skates until I was probably 10 or 11, and they were bought by a friend of my father's. We couldn't afford it. We did a lot of hand-me-downs, equipment exchanges, and you're absolutely right, hockey is an expensive sport. We didn't play 12 months of the year. Kids today are playing 12 months of the year.
Well, you were playing on frozen lakes.
I was playing on frozen lakes, but we played other sports in the summertime. And I think it's healthy that the kids play other sports. They hang around other kids. They have other coaches, other parents, and I think that's a healthy thing to do. Playing hockey 12 months of the year isn't necessary, and far too often with our kids that is happening.
How early in the winter was the ice solid enough to skate on?
How long into
the spring?
We in Parry Sound, when I was growing up, really cold. You know, we'd be skating in November for sure. But, you know, we skated on the river, the bay, parking lots, the school rink, wherever we could, we had a stick in our hands.
You think that's going to change as a result of global warming?
Well, I mean, things are different today. I mean, we're never going to see that again. I mean, for different reasons. I mean, we would leave in the morning and Mom would say, you'll be home by dark. And for different reasons, the weather and there's not as much ice. And the safety also. I mean, I understand all that. So we're never going to see that. So that's why, in my mind, it's important that that coach, that official on the ice, that parent in the stands, that person, that president of any league running it, that they set good values and they make it a great experience for every kid. And by working together, they can make it a great experience for every kid. And unfortunately, it's not. Those are my fondest memories. I don't know. Did you play a sport? Whatever.
I was totally incompetent.
Yeah, well, but a lot of your folks here, I'm sure.
I loved watching them.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot played sports, and a lot of kids are going to play sports. So let's make it a happy experience for every kid.
Well, I've heard that kids who grow up in many parts of Canada learn to skate almost as soon as they learn to walk. Yeah. Was that true for you?
I started skating probably when I was 4, and that was our sport in Canada, yes.
And played pickup games in the same way that kids here might play basketball,
sandlot, baseball, basketball out at the local playground. But that's how we learn to play the game. And again, as I said earlier, it's never going to be the same. Kids today wait for it to be organized, tournaments, 12 months of the year, on and on and on. I don't think that's necessary.
Your ability to skate seemingly without effort was something that distinguished you as a player. Were you a better skater than most of the kids you were growing up with?
We had a lot of kids that could skate, but the way we played, we would go on the bay, have a large surface, and there'd be 8 or 10 on each team, and if you didn't learn to skate or handle the puck, it wasn't any fun. We didn't have any adults coaching or screaming or yelling. We were just our buddies playing and having fun, and you don't see that much anymore, whether in any of the sports, baseball, soccer, you just don't see it anymore. The kids are waiting for it to be organized. I would like to see the kids go out by themselves, have fun, and play the game and learn how to play.
Well, you say that anybody who showed up would be included in the game. That included the kid that nobody wanted on their team.
Everybody played. And that's the way it should. I mean, minor sports in a community, and when I say minor sports, I'm talking about games played by our children. Minor sports is for everyone in the community, not just the elite, not just the travel teams. It's for everyone.
Well, hockey with 20 players, 10 on each side, that can get rather crowded. Mm-hmm. But you've credited having played 10-on-10 with improving your stick handling ability.
Absolutely.
Can I assume it's pretty difficult to score when there are 10 players trying to stop you?
You didn't score a lot, but you had the puck. You had to learn to skate and handle the puck if you're going to have any fun. And that's really how I learned my skill. On skating and handling the puck, just out with my buddies, not in the rinks with organized hockey.
On the other hand, I'd imagine it's scary for the goalie when 10 skaters are coming at him.
We were very young and we weren't that old, so we weren't lifting the puck or shooting the puck that hard. So it was pretty safe.
I just meant 10 kids coming at you all at once.
Yeah, but someone's going to get in your way.
Were you playing defense at the time?
When we played like that, we played everywhere. I started playing defense, when I was a peewee at 10 or 11. And one of the coaches I had, and I write about this in the book, wanted me on the ice more. So one shift I play forward, the next shift I play defense.
So that's why you became one of the best scoring defensemen in the history of the game.
That's the one thing that from the time I played minor hockey. And, I was owned by the Boston Bruins when I was 14.
Does that still happen?
No, it's a different system today. There wasn't a draft as it is today, Leonard. You're drafted at 16 to play in a junior club and 18 to play on to be owned by an NHL team.
And they owned you for life unless they traded you.
And when I was 14, I signed what we called a C-form. And from that day going forward, I was owned by the Boston Bruins unless they traded me or sold me or released me. And the great thing was, I had a style I played. It was a style that coaches didn't like, teams didn't like, an offensive-minded defenseman. But they continued to let me play my way, and I couldn't imagine playing any other way, so it certainly helped.
And then people started imitating you, so you weren't the only one anymore.
I agree. I think the pros have a great influence on our kids. Let's go back to that role model thing. I mean, kids look at the pros and what that pro says and does. The kids saying, why that's, it must be right. It's the same as a coach.
I mean, we see that in another way when people buy team shirts and you see people with a certain number and a name on their back. They're saying, in a way, I admire this person.
Yep. And what that person does, what he says, how he acts. Hey, look, we have a lot of great athletes out there that are good role models. We're not perfect. we make mistakes. We do some things we wish we didn't do, but it happens. But overall, hopefully the good will outweigh the pluses, will outweigh the minuses.
Well, when Charles Barkley said, I'm not a role model, he was saying it for effect, don't you think?
He was doing a commercial, yes.
Do kids who grow up in Parry Sound today still have the kind of freedom that you did, or are they supervised the schedule the way most kids seem to be in New York when they want to play?
It'll never be the same. It's all organized tournaments. Some of these little kids now are playing 100 games, and I just don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's right. It's not fair to mom and dad. It's expensive, and I just don't think you need it. I think it's really healthy to be handled by other coaches, hang around other kids, hang around other parents, and I think that's the healthy thing. I never went to a hockey school until I turned pro, and I went as an instructor. So I played baseball. I couldn't wait to get my baseball uniform on. That was a big thing for me. So we played different sports in different seasons.
You said your parents never pressured you to play or practice. Mm-hmm. Now you're the president of the Bobby Orr Hockey Group, mm-hmm. a sports agency, and you deal with young players mm-hmm. and their families. Do you sometimes meet parents who put too much pressure
absolutely.
On their kids?
Every day. My parents, people will go up to my father and say something like, hey, your kid's going to play in the NHL. And my father's advice to me was, hey, go out and play. Have fun. We'll see what happens. And I wish more parents would look at it like that.
And your father told Eric Lindros' parents that he had done nothing to get you to the top of the NHL when they approached him for advice. Yeah. Eric Lindros turned out to be pretty good. I don't know if
he followed your father's
advice.
Yeah. Eric... Mr. and Mrs. Lindros, who had a very young player, Eric, went to my father and wanted to know. Went to my father and said, look, we have a kid a lot like yours, and what did you do with your boy? And my dad looked at them, and he said, nothing. And they said, you did nothing? No. He said, I let him play and let him have fun, and we were going to see what would happen. And for us, it worked out.
And he went on to star for the Philadelphia Flyers and the New York Rangers. Yeah. Had a good career.
Had a very good career, yes.
You have a reputation for being shy, even reclusive at times. You don't usually like to talk about yourself. So what inspired you to write this book?
I've been approached by many to do a book, and I just thought it was time that I'm getting up there. I'm 66 this year. I thought it was time to put down on paper but the lessons I've learned, the help. I mean, we sometimes forget the support you get when you're a kid. You forget the sacrifices your parents and family members make. You forget about the so many people that helped you along the way. I met so many nice people along the way. But there's a little bit, hopefully, in the book for you, that up-and-coming player and the challenges he's going to face, that parent who thinks they have the next Sidney Crosby. So hopefully there are lessons in this book that will help most of the readers.
Wasn't Gordie Howe 66 when he quit playing
hockey? I think he was 108. Gordie Howe was incredible. In my mind, Gordie is the best player ever. There'll never be another Gordie Howe.
Do your kids play?
My kids never played. My kids never played hockey. It doesn't upset me at all.
Well, they watched you playing.
Well, they were very young when I retired, Leonard. So they weren't really brought up in that hockey world. But they played baseball, football, soccer. They played all the other sports, and that made me happy. I wasn't upset that they didn't play hockey because I played. But I think the lessons a kid can learn playing minor sports are important.
You've made it clear that you didn't write this book to even any scores, but we're going to take a little break.
Yep.
And when we come back, we will talk about what happened with you and Allan Eagleson, the lawyer and hockey promoter who was your close friend and who ended up cheating you out of the money that you earned as a professional hockey player. My guest is Bobby Orr. Anybody, even people who don't know about hockey, know the name Bobby Orr. He's written a memoir called Orr, My Story. It's published by Putnam. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. We'll be right back. We're back with Bobby Orr, who played for the Boston Bruins from 1966 to 1976 and then two more years for the Chicago Blackhawks, and has won pretty much every award you can win in his sport. Now he has written a memoir called Orr, My Story. It is published by Putnam. And as I said earlier, you didn't want to even scores here, but there's no way you could have written this book without telling the story of what happened with you and Alan Eagleson, a lawyer and hockey promoter who was your close friend, agent, and manager for most of your career. Mm-hmm. What happened?
He was like a brother to me. I met him when I was 16 years old. And
was he a prominent agent?
He was just
at the
getting
time?
Into the business. He had a couple of players in Toronto, and you know, I was the first new player for him. But he was really the only guy around, and the shame of it all is he had everyone. It was incredible, but I soon figured out that, you know, I trust him. He's like a brother. I mean, and
how long were you with him?
I started with him when I was 16.
And how long did that last?
Oh gosh, I left after I retired, so it'd be 78, 77, 78 anyway. Trusted him and got to the point all I wanted to do was get away from the man. I didn't want to be near him. I knew I was in trouble financially. He was charged and put in jail, and many people think that I was a big part of the charges, but there was nothing in there about my affairs. So what he did was steal from the players he was representing through insurance, through the international hockey, and it's just a shame what he did, not only to me, but so many other players.
Were you left with any of the money that you put
aside
for
much.
Retirement?
I didn't have much, no. And people wonder why I didn't sue him. Well, one, I just wanted to get away from the man. I didn't want to see him. And two, I didn't have the money to hire a lawyer, which would have been very expensive. And three, he's very powerful in Canada. And it took the U.S. government almost 5 years to get him to come back to the States to face any charges. And it was a deal that was made. And in Canada, I think it was 205, I understand, he was pardoned in Canada, my God. But he should be ashamed of himself. What he did to so many players is disgraceful.
Well, he headed the National Hockey League's Players Association, credited with, improving players' bargaining power, and he was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
He's no longer in the Hockey Hall of Fame, and he knew he was going to be thrown out, so he left before he was thrown out. He was stripped of his Order of Canada, and he was disbarred, so spent, I think, 4 or 5 months in jail, and in my mind, not enough. He took a lot of money from a lot of people, and it was disgraceful.
And you tell your young clients to stay involved with managing the money that they earn. Do you wish someone had given you the same advice?
Well, you went
with Eagleson when you were so young, and I guess you considered him so trustworthy. You never would have doubted him.
I trusted them, and in speaking to the players today, I say to them, look, it's your money. If you have a financial advisor or an agent, whatever, ask questions. I mean, and if they balk at you asking questions or they are upset that you ask questions, that should be a red flag. Pay attention. It's your money. Learn to read a financial. It's not that hard, but stay involved. It's your money. You work for it.
And he's not the only agent who's done this the players he represents. I wonder whether there just isn't this temptation.
I can see, Leonard, where it could be easy because players don't pay attention. They're young players, and they're out there playing a game which they love. They have such a love and passion for it, and they're just not paying attention. They want to play the game. But it's not only professional athletes that are getting stung by some advisors and people. You hear every day business people, athletes getting stung by their advisors.
You mentioned that you were pretty much, you signed for life with the Boston Bruins when you were just 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
had you wanted to play with the Bruins? They were a pretty lowly team at the time. I thought every kid in Canada wants to play with the Canadiens.
I had some other teams kind of looking at me. When I was 14, I weighed 125 pounds. And back then,
125-pound defenseman?
A defenseman, yeah.
And you're not the tallest guy either.
No, I'm not. I wasn't a giant. You know, the Montreal Canadiens were there. A gentleman that worked in our organization, minor hockey organization in Prairie Sound, sent a letter, and I believe the letter is in the book, to the Toronto Maple Leafs about this young player in Prairie Sound, and they answered that, you know, we don't go after 14-year-olds, but we'll keep an eye on them. So, but Scotty Bowman was in; he was working with Montreal at that time. Detroit had a little interest, but a gentleman by the name of Ren Blair, who worked for the Bruins, but he was also going to be the general manager of a new junior team in Oshawa, which is east of Toronto. And they were looking for players for that team, and they really found me by mistake. I was playing in a playoff series in Gananoque, and they were there to see two other players that they wanted to play on their junior team the following year, and I was playing in that game.
As a signing bonus, you were given a new suit, and each of your parents was given $1,000.
No, that's the contract was my received $1,000. My father, this was in 1962, and my father could get a new car, no newer than 56. They stuccoed my mother's house. And I got a suit. I didn't have a suit, and I had my first suit.
But still, when you see the signing bonuses that people get today, people who don't always even make it to the big team, I don't know. Are you tempted to laugh or cry?
No, that doesn't bother me, Leonard. It's a new world.
You also didn't get paid the kind of money that second-rate players get today.
Yeah, you know, I did fine. And the money doesn't bother me. The only thing that bothers me today in the game, and I write about it a little bit, is, you know, we all have a level that we should be playing at, and I like to see you play at that level consistently. Like your show. I mean, you have a level, and you expect yourself to perform every day at that level. And you know, Sidney Crosby's up here by himself. I don't expect you to play like Sidney Crosby. But if your level's here, play at that level consistently. And that's the only thing that bothers me in the game. It's not the money. It's not anything else. I just want to see the players play more consistently.
And why do you think they don't play consistently?
I have no idea. I mean, I've been...
You get distracted?
I don't know what it is. People keep telling me, what's the money? I just can't believe it's the money. I mean,
but they're going to get the money no matter what.
Yeah,
no.
But if you have that love and passion for what you have, great love and passion for your job. I couldn't wait to get on the ice. I had a great, and I had never had that love and passion taken out of me. And I think in some cases, some players do get that love and passion for the game taken out of them. It becomes a job. I mean, you don't look at this as a job. Yeah, we're paid. But this is what you want to do. I mean, that's what I want to do.
Well, I can't imagine retiring.
No. I mean, I had a love and passion for the game that was never taken out of me by my parents, by a coach. I just couldn't wait to get on the ice.
When you went with the Oshawa, was it?
Oshawa Generals.
Oshawa Generals. You were in the eighth grade.
Yep.
So we were going to school at the same time?
Well, that was the reason that I commuted my first year. I wasn't going to go. My parents would not, my mother especially, would not let me leave home. So I, in the junior league in those days, played on weekends. So Friday afternoon after school, I'd go to Oshawa or Toronto, where we played a lot of our
games.
And
how did you get there? You didn't drive.
My dad, you know, worked a number of jobs, so he would drive when he could. But I had wonderful friends. Again, this is what this book did for me, going back and thinking about so many people that supported me, and I had great friends that would drive, and my father couldn't.
And as you said, you were 125 pounds, playing against people who were older and bigger.
19 and 20-year-olds.
And more experienced. How many years did you play with the Generals?
I was there 4 years. I wasn't ready to turn pro before I was 18, but you can't. In those days, you couldn't turn pro until you were 18. So when I was 18, I turned pro. But again, go back to when we were kids, those 10-on-10, my skating ability, that's what saved me. I could skate, and I could get away from some of these guys. But there'd be some Monday mornings I'd go into school, you know, in the eighth grade, and I'd have stitches. And the kids, you know, looking at me with bruises. It was a little funny.
Got beat up last night.
Got beat up last night.
Were the Generals a good team?
Yeah, we became a good team. We were an expansion team when I started, and we became a good team.
And then you moved up to the Bruins when you were just 18?
Mm-hmm.
Had you put on weight by then?
When I went to my first Bruin camp, I probably weighed 165. So I was getting huge.
And you won Rookie of the Year at the end of the season, so I guess you did okay.
Yeah, we did all right. We were a last-place team. We weren't a good team. And what happened because of the team, I got a lot of ice time. So that really helped my development.
You tell a story in this book about squaring off during your first game with the Bruins against Gordie Howe, your idol.
I was a little smarter than to square off with him, but what happened...
He was tough.
Oh, he was a tough guy and the best ever. There'll never be another Gordie Howe. But I didn't square off with him. What happened was, I'm sure earlier in the game I might have gone into the corner and run. Maybe I took a run at him. I probably did. So later in the game, I made a pass, and I'm watching my pretty pass. And next thing you know, I'm laying on the ice, and it's Gordy standing over me. So I think he wanted to let the kid know that the big guy
welcome
is still
to
here.
The NHL.
Welcome,
kid.
And the big guy's still here.
Well, a listener, John in Paramus, called in to ask you what you think about all the fighting in hockey. Now, do you think there's more fighting now than there was in your time?
No, I don't think so. Well, we're a different world now, Leonard. We have to change. We're trying to attract that new fan. There's a big push now in eliminating hockey at the NHL, a professional level. There's absolutely no place for fighting in our kids' programs. That's no place. I'm just a little nervous eliminating the fighting at our level. You got to think big guys, speed, strength. You know, the equipment's different. We're wide open, emotions, and I don't think we need fighting for our game to survive. But I do think that fear of getting beat up is a great deterrent from doing stupid things on the ice. And I'm just afraid if the fighting is eliminated completely, there'll be a lot of guys that are going to get real brave. They're going to be doing things they wouldn't normally do. And look, I see it game after game trying to intimidate players. We can't have that. I want to see our skilled players play. Sidney Crosby. Do you want to see Sidney? Who's in my mind, the best player?
Today.
You know, poor Sidney. I don't want to see Sidney hurt. I don't want to see Sidney in the penalty box. I don't want to see him looking over
his shoulder. So there's usually some goon on the team who protects Sidney Crosby.
Well, it's not happening because if you do that, then that person that tries to protect Sidney with the rules gets in trouble big time, suspensions and so on. I just think that we have to decide what we want. Do we want to see our skill players play, or do we want guys trying to intimidate our skill players?
But it's also argued that fans like the fights, and they just as they like the big hit in football. And if you eliminate too many of them,
I'm not saying they're dangerous. I'm not saying take that. We're a tough game, and we don't want injuries. We're going to have injuries. I mean.
You had a knee injury in your first year.
Yeah, so we're going to have injuries. What we have to get rid of is the foolishness, the stage fights. You know, I see fights some nights that I'm thinking, well, why did that happen? You know, the only reason it should happen is if two players, because of emotion, something happens, it shouldn't be staged and it might happen. So we have to have it there. And if we've got a tough guy, I mean, in games I see tough guys going after players that don't play a physical game to try to intimidate them, to try to get them off their game. We shouldn't have that. I want to see our skilled players play.
You were plagued with knee problems throughout your career. I assume that's what shortened your career. Mm-hmm. But you seem to feel that if you'd waited a little longer to actually start playing on that higher level, that you might not have had that problem.
Yeah, I can't help thinking. I started playing against men when I was 14 years old, and I was hit a lot, and I was still growing. Hey, look, this had nothing to do with the team. If I had waited longer, maybe if my rehab had been better, I wanted to play.
And they expected you to go out on the ice quicker.
I can't blame it on the teams. That was my decision. I was never forced back to play, Leonard. But I can't help thinking that if I'd waited longer and did more rehab, maybe it wouldn't have been as bad.
How many surgeries did you have on the knee over the course of
your doing the book? I think I got with the records. I think I have it up to 16 or 17.
Wow.
But there are two hospitals I had surgery at. They didn't save the record, so I don't have those. So I think I'm in 18 to 20.
And you have knee replacement in both legs.
Two knee replacements. The only thing that doesn't hurt in my body now are my knees. My hands hurt, my back hurts, my knees are great.
Did players who carried the puck less frequently tend to stay healthy longer?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, my style. I mean, I played a style where I handled the puck a lot. And, hey, we're a contact game, and I'm not suggesting we take the contact out of the game. I carried the puck a lot, and in a contact game, if you carry the puck a lot, you will be hit a lot.
There's also been a lot of concern in recent years about concussions in professional hockey and football especially. But you've written that you suffered only a single concussion during your career, and you didn't wear a helmet.
Didn't wear a helmet. Maybe the players are a little more respectful of that.
You think helmets have encouraged people to hit harder?
I think with the way we've opened up the game, the speed, and it's hard to slow down, I think that's got something to do with it. What we got to do in the NHL is, one, high blindside hits, you know, from an unsuspecting player, you know, and hitting from behind. I think the hybrid icing, the new icing rule, it's almost automatic icing. It's called a hybrid icing. I haven't seen a player get run in the end boards for the season. I've seen great games this year with no fights. It's just, I just think with the speed of our game, that with the new rules, no center line, I can't hold players up to help my teammate. There's just so much speed now, and I think that's added to injury.
Haven't the rules been changed recently requiring players to wear visors?
It's not mandatory yet, but I think it will, and that's fine. That doesn't bother me at all. I think that's fine. And a lot of players do wear visors, not all. But, that visors is fine. Safety, anything we can do to make it safer for the players, we should be doing.
What about that concussion you suffered as a result of being checked by Pat Quinn during a game with the Toronto Maple Leafs in 1989? You spent a night in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Did you suffer any lasting effects?
I've reported this. I don't remember being nauseous, you know, or dizzy. I really don't remember any of the effects that you sometimes feel after a concussion.
But you tell a funny story here about being approached by a stranger the next day in the lobby of the hotel.
And he was tougher looking than you, Leonard.
And he said, he asked you if you wanted him to take care of Pat Quinn.
I left the hospital, and the next morning, in those days we stayed in a motel during the playoffs, and I walked into the lobby in the motel, and there was a kind of a rough looking character with the overcoat collar up, the hat on, and wanted to know if I wanted him to take care of Pat Quinn. I said, no, I'll take care of Pat Quinn myself.
You didn't wear socks when you played hockey. Didn't your feet get cold?
No, feet didn't get cold. I wish I had a great story. I don't have a great story about why I didn't wear socks, except that when I played junior, we packed our own bags. I forgot to pack my socks. I went barefoot, and I went on from there.
And you felt more comfortable that
way? Yeah, I'm a strange guy, Leonard.
Well, that strange guy, Bobby Orr, will be signing books at the NHL store today at 5 o'clock. That's at 1185 Avenue of the Americas between 46th Street and 47th Street. His book, Orr, O-R-R, My Story, is published by Putnam. And Bobby, it's been such a great pleasure
Leonard,
having you on our
you.
Show.
So nice being with you.